Okay, Hare Krishna. This is Anadhar Swami. You know, I'm getting a new phone with better reception. I actually have it now. But I'm using this phone because I have the access to the organizer code. Ruti, you're listening. I'll get you my new phone number. Now, tomorrow I'm giving a seminar, Perfection in Paradox. So it's always difficult for me to give a seminar for the first time, and especially since it's the first time I'm going to be in coming back, and usually most of the people are there. So I need to practice it a little bit because it's not a seminar that I've done before. So I'll just give you a little summary of what I'm doing. And a lot of times the best way that I think is when I talk. Even Prabhupada told Kamal Krishna Maharaj that when he said he didn't have enough time to study, because he was so busy, Prabhupada said, give 15 minutes of class, and that'll be like 2 hours of speaking. So I'm just going to share, and I think also you may be interested in the topic. Om Jnana Timurandasya Jnanam Jana Shalakaya Yaksura Mulitam Yena Esmai Shri Gurve Nama Shri Chaitanya Mano Vishnam Tapitam Yena Bhutale Sayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Sapadantikam Vancha Kalpa Tadubhyascha Vipashindu Vaye Vicha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Shivasadi Gaur Bhaktavinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, greetings from New York. Stuyvesant Falls. I'm back at my place. And it's really a pleasure to be at your own place and where things are organized according to your needs. I've been trying to prepare this seminar. You know, every year for the last, I guess this is my third year at Yogamaya, where I have a nice connection there. And they have faith in my presentation of Krishna consciousness. And I must have given about, at least 10 satsangs there now. So it's kind of a challenge because I have to come up with new seminars each time. So this time there was actually a suggestion from Bryn. I could say something between self-sacrifice and self-care. We need both, but it seems a contradiction if you hold self-sacrifice as an ideal. Even I know my uncle, who was one of the four chaplains who were famous people, he on a battleship and gave up his whole life to save others. And I think Bryn asked it because I think these kind of self-contradictory in the sense that they're two principles that one may embrace, but they may be self-contradictory. So I was thinking of the importance of kind of resolving kind of contradictions, or the inability to resolve contradictions. I thought of just recently in relationship to a student, but not a younger person, and a very submissive person, kind of, seems to be a humble person, not that assertive. And he got some service helping someone that he really revered. And that person had his own mission. And my friend said, well, he served that mission. And it was an incredibly arduous task where he had to, really, it was beyond his physical and psychological limits. It was a great service, but it was incredibly intense. And at times, also, the person who he revered, you know, was pushing him so hard, but at the same time, he wasn't completely satisfied, or it was very difficult, or whatever it is. And as a result, and the person was really just devastated, and a wreck, actually, when I met him. And I was particularly concerned because this person is extremely talented and years ago made some mistakes that really devastated his self-esteem. The response to that, to the mistakes he made, which weren't that serious, but I spent years and years kind of trying to build this person up. And then to see him come back in such a broken condition. And his idea was that he just was surrendered and submissive. And serving. But here was the result. The result was with something else. It was service. But service, if it's spiritual, it should elevate. It's service, and the person is crushed. The person has lost his confidence, you know. But in his mind, it was service, surrender, sacrifice. But the paradox is, the contradiction is service, but spiritual, but devastation. They should, well, you know, what was the lack of depth of understanding that led to a opposite result? It's just like the classic paradox, the reason why water everywhere, but not a drop to drink. So there's a paradox. But there's only a paradox, there's only a contradiction when one doesn't have a depth of understanding of water. Doesn't have the depth of understanding that water can be ocean water. And not all water is to drink. So, same thing. Service. But understanding the depth of service, a depth of self-sacrifice, a depth of spirituality, should it wind up in that way? So even the Gita has a classic example of a quandary, a paradox, that Arjuna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, he's asked to fight. He's asked to fight, and he's also at the same time being told to be pure, to be spiritual, to use, you know, to have buddhi, to have intelligence, to have spiritual acumen, and then he's asked to fight in a war, and his relatives are on the other side. So when we face apparent contradictions, and this is coming from Krishna, he's saying both things, so this is the supreme authority. So you assume that they're both true. You assume that they're both true. So how to resolve that? It means you have to have a depth of understanding what spirituality means. And if you don't have a depth of understanding of spirituality, then you may avoid doing activities that are spiritual, or you may do activities in the name of spirituality that are not. So, paradoxes, these kind of contradictions, which we're going to discuss today, if they're not resolved, then we won't be able to apply these spiritual principles properly if we don't have the tools to understand them. So I wrote down when Bryn sent me this, basic few sentences, sacrifice and self-care and sacrifice. When she sent me that, I immediately thought of different issues. And when there's a lack of understanding of the principle, they lead to a kind of harm. And I also thought about how to resolve them. For example, humility and self-esteem, or humility and confidence. Because humility, the definition of humility is small, a consciousness of one's defects or shortcomings, not self-assertive, not proud, small, low. And then it seems to go hand in hand with low self-esteem. I thought I would read Amara Jivana. By Bhakti Vinod Thakur. Amara Jivana Sada Papevata Nahiko Punyerale. Throughout my whole life, I've been addicted to sin, never performing any pious activities. I've simply been a source of trouble and worry for others. My own pleasure, I never fear to commit any sin. I am devoid of pity and full of selfishness. I'm sorry at others' happiness, and I'm an inveterate liar. Indeed, I take delight in others' miseries. Endless are the selfish desires in my heart. I am prone to anger. So this kind of conception of humility seems to belie spirituality. Or self-care and self-sacrifice and self-care. I thought about, kind of the ideals we have. Oh. employers or a description of Runty Dave. He had no, King Runty Dave had no addition to enjoy material benefits from the demigods. He offered them obeisances, but because he was factually attached to Lord Vishnu Vasudev, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he fixed his mind at Lord Vishnu's lotus feet. He was a pure devotee, always Krishna conscious, and free from material desires, free from the Lord's illusory potency. Contrary to him, Maya entirely vanished, exactly like a dream. Oh, wait. One second. Here's a description of Runty Dave. Runty Dave never endeavored to earn anything. He would enjoy whatever he got by the arrangement of providence. When guests came, he would give them everything. Thus he underwent considerable suffering along with the members of his family. Indeed, he and his family members shivered for want of food and water, yet Runty Dave always remained sober. Once after fasting for 48 days, in the morning Runty Dave received some water and some foodstuffs made with milk and ghee. When he and his family were about to eat, Brahmin guests arrived. Because Runty Dave perceived the presence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead everywhere, in every living entity, he received the guests with faith and respect and gave them a share of the food. The Brahmin guest ate his share and then went away. Thereafter, having divided the remaining food with his relatives, Runty Dave was about to eat his own share. When a suitor arrived, seeing the suitor, Runty Dave gave him a share of the food. When the suitor went away, another guest arrived, surrounded by dogs, and said, "O King, I and my company of dogs are very hungry. Please give us something to eat." With great respect, Runty offered the balance of food to the dog and the master of the dogs. The king offered them obeisances. Thereafter, only the drinking water remained, and there was only enough to satisfy one person. When the king was about to drink, a chandal appeared. "O king, although I am lowborn, kindly give me some water." Aggrieved at hearing the pitiful words of the poor fatigued chandal, Maharaj Runty Dave spoke the following nectarian words: "I do not pray for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for the eight mystic perfections, my salvation. I only want to stay among all the living entities and suffer all distresses on their behalf so they may be freed from suffering." So I thought these ones that just try to humility, confidence, or self-esteem, self-sacrifice, and self-care, conformity, and create creativity. In bhakti, the tradition of anudata, we follow. So does that type of anudata, and it's very, that you follow. Prabhupada said, you know, his success was that he was 100% faithful in the words of a spiritual master. Example of great spiritual personalities is that they conform to the tradition. So where does that leave room for creativity and being faithful? And, you know, where is the line of being faithful? It's such a, these are all core basic spiritual qualities, and they require a depth of understanding. And if they don't have a depth of understanding, then they could lead to harm, or at least lead to, yeah, they can lead to situations that, and then spirituality and working Arjuna, the same thing. He thought that spirituality meant not working. So I'm thinking that. So I'm thinking that the way to resolve it, right, or the way to have a clear understanding of these paradoxes. If you don't understand them, then water, water everywhere, but not a drop to drink. But you water, water, you would be confused. You would see water, water everywhere, and think your problem of thirst is solved, but it's not. So I thought the real solution to this is to understand Dharma. Because what Dharma is it's the science of appropriate decision. I talk very often about the mind being malleable, and that the purpose of yoga is to bring the mind to a non-distorted and clean place so it can perfectly reflect, can perfectly see things, and therefore one can act on truth, and therefore one can be in harmony in truth. And what Dharma is, what the correct decision is, and everyone is facing so many quandaries where they feel that they're doing something appropriate, but somehow they're not sure if the effect is good, or they're not sure what to do, or they know humility, and they're in a situation where they're abused, but but at the same time it's their proper authority. So how do you actually resolve these things? And the real answer is Dharma, and what Dharma is it's the science of appropriate decision. You know, in every circumstance, there is an appropriate decision for appropriate decisions. And what is that appropriate decision? It is the decision, and in yoga, it would be called a klesha. That's not troublesome. It's the decision that puts the appropriate impressions in the consciousness to elevate the consciousness to a higher level of contentment and perception. So there's a science of making those decisions. That's what Dharma is. So I think that, you know, really what I'm going to get, I'm just trying to mold now what I'm really trying to do is give a template for action. It's really about proper action and understanding the subtleties of our decisions. And in the name of humility, we can lower our esteem if we don't understand the depth of humility. In the name of self-sacrifice, we can harm ourselves, not knowing the real subtleties of self-sacrifice. In the name of conformity, we can lose initiative, we can lose creativity, we can lose the ability to communicate things in an appropriate way. In the name of being faithful, we can be blind followers and accept things in the name of faith without really understanding what they are, and actually be faithful to not the sources of truth, but be faithful to our conceptions of things when they're filtered through our frame of reference, which are not true. And in the name of spirituality, one can give up his duties and responsibilities. I also thought of the term of Sambandha Gyan, that, you know, the tradition, what a spiritual tradition is, a spiritual tradition trains one to understand truth, understand reality. Understanding reality is understanding truths and their applications, truths and their limits. Just like renunciation is a truth, but so is attachment. There's things that we keep to be healthy, to even keep our hearts healthy. So I thought, you know, try to resolve. For example, dealing with humility. How do you resolve humility and self-esteem? Because they seem to be contradictory, but both are required. Spiritual life can't be a psychological apparition. So the idea is that you have to understand things deeper. And when you understand at the core what humility is, that it's something very, very internal, and one can have that sense of smallness, seeing one's faults, not being assertive. Without it being a psychological aberration, okay, you can have an understanding of yourself, and your understanding yourself in relationship to everything else. But relatively speaking, we are insignificant. And we can understand that very, very clearly. And we can feel that. We can feel that. But when it's humility, it's not a psychological aberration. Because when one is humble, not a psychological aberration, because when one is humble, he does not desire to be great. One is happy with oneself, but perhaps not happy with one's ability to live up to oneself. But there's no disconnect between your ideals and what you are at the core. You just may feel that you're not feel bad that you're thinking yourself more than you are. Where in terms of a psychological aberration, you're feeling yourself low, but it's a psychological aberration because you're wanting to be great, you're wanting to be superior, where in humility, you're happy to be insignificant. You may be unhappy because you are not living up to that mark, but you're actually happy with who you are. And the more you realize that, the more happy you are, because the more you can feel, the more humble you are, the more appreciative you are of the gifts and the mercy that you receive. Or you can extend humility to codependence. And develop a need to be affirmed by someone in terms of your ego. And therefore, rather than serving a person's needs, you serve their whimsical desires, and their whimsical desires don't represent truth. I thought I can ask people to meditate on how they would like other people to think of themselves. Of how they would like people to think of themselves. And why they want people to think of themselves. And, you know, they may want to be thought of as humble, as a good devotee, or... But if you actually look at the eternal consciousness of why, it's material. Because that's their self-image of what puts them in a superior position. But really, if a person is really true, you know, how do you want people to look at you? You know, you don't want people to look at you. You don't have any desire for people to look at you. So a devotee, he sees himself not in the center, a spiritual person. He doesn't see himself in the center. He doesn't want to be in the center. He wants to see himself as the object of the center or the service of the center. And in that position of service, you may recognize that you have karma, and you may be confident in your abilities, but at the same time, neither the inspiration for those abilities or those abilities are yours. They're coming from something else. They can be taken away in a second. It's like a bank teller has money. He doesn't think he's rich. But at the same time, he may have confidence that he can, you know, give $1 billion or do his job. You know, and he may be good at it. He just doesn't feel, he just doesn't have that ego of being great. Because constitutionally we're not great. There's so much beyond us. So someone is humble, he's accepting that. And therefore, whatever relative powers one has, they don't change that core conception. It's just like an example of a player in an orchestra. You know, he may be a great musician, but he doesn't have a desire to stand out. He's contributing to something greater than himself. He's part of the orchestra. And then I thought, when you resolve self-sacrifice and self-care, you have to have an objective. So what's the objective in Dharma? The objective in Dharma is to realize the self, is to purify the mind, So obviously the mood of love and compassion and sacrifice is very much connected to our core being, our core self, you know, the soul, the consciousness of the soul is very much connected to that. It's very, very much connected to that. But at the same time, one second. You know, those who are listening, I really appreciate it because it's so hard to put together a new seminar, and there's so many subtle points. As I'm talking, I'm actually seeing what I have to do. So it's almost like I'm using you in a way, but it is clarifying my thoughts. I think that these self-contradictory ideas, you have to resolve how they're not contradictory. Otherwise, you'll be, in the name of spirituality, you'll be moving away from realization of the self because you won't understand the concepts deeply. So I think what my core mission here is in this class is to, what my core mission in the class will be is is to explain the necessity for Dharma, for good decisions. And Dharma means good decisions. Dharma means what is the appropriate decision for the appropriate circumstance. And the basis of that is a proper and deep understanding. And that's part of good decisions. There's jnana and vairagya. Jnana means knowledge. Without knowing what to do, without knowledge, you don't know what to do. Without self-discipline, you can't do it. So the basis is actually jnana. There has to be proper knowledge and proper understanding. Otherwise, you'll get yourselves in situations where in the name of the spiritual concept, you'll be moving away from the understanding of the self because you won't understand that spiritual concept deeply. And the classic example, as I mentioned, you know, the friend I had, you know, in the name of humility, it's codependence. In other words, just a form of submission is not humility in itself. It's a particular consciousness based on the understanding of the self in a particular, you know, humble way, understanding, you know, and embracing, you know, the position of this, what is the spiritual position? The spiritual position is one of humility and service. I mean, it's not just a form of submission. It's a consciousness of submission. And it's submission to what? It's submission to truth. And that truth may carry one to action. It may carry one to use one's talents in a very, very powerful and confident way. So I think really what my mission here in this particular class to give something to people that is worth is to first let them know that there is a science and that if one wants to be successful in life, he has to avail himself of the science. There is a tradition of knowledge. And you know, the concept of some bundling ad, you know, balanced understanding. And that's what actually, if you're in a tradition and you have sacred text, that's what it is. You are getting trained in a balanced understanding. Is that, if you really know what a sacred text is, it is looking at things from different ways and understanding in its depth. So, in the name of the good quality of vairagya or renunciation, you're not giving up things that you need, including your attachments, to be whole, integrated persons for the purpose of the depth of self-realization and understanding the self. So I think if I can touch on those, really, what is humility? If you understand deeply what is humility, humility is not just how you feel about yourself. Humility is how you want to feel about yourself. Humility means you want to feel low and insignificant, because that's what you are. And that's a condition of loving. People who are deep in spirituality, these feelings of not, I don't know if you call it worthlessness, but humility, they're right there, core at the core of one's being. There's a spiritual consciousness. A spiritual consciousness. There's nothing, you can't say spiritual without humility. Spiritual doesn't mean inflated conception of oneself. It's not even true. We are extremely dependent. And we do have many faults and shortcomings. And the shortcomings are not embracing that, not embracing who we are. Which is a particle of consciousness of something much greater than ourselves, which has an appropriate role to play. But the role is not cosmically significant. So humility, that this doesn't mean how you feel about yourself. Humility means how you want to feel about yourself. And self-sacrifice, it's noble, because we're meant for sacrifice. We're meant for giving, because we're part. We're not the whole. We're part of something greater, and the part is meant to serve. It's meant to sacrifice. That is its ultimate benefit, when the part sacrifices for the whole. Then the part has value and meaning. It doesn't make the part. So the part sacrifices, but to do that sacrifice, it has to keep itself fit. The hand is serving the body. Repairing the hand is not different than serving the body. It's just like on the airplanes, when if you have a child and you're the mother and you love the child, the oxygen comes, you put it over yourself first. That is part of self-sacrifice. conformity and creativity. Anyway, it's a great challenge for me because I'm trying my hardest to gauge a grasp on a principle here that can be used. And I'm thinking that the principle is there are core spiritual qualities. And they form the basis of a good person's life. But to be true to those qualities, one has to understand them deeply. Okay, anybody like to ask any questions? Anybody like to say hello?
Hi, Krishna. This is Gail.
All right, little Gail. Yeah.
Yeah. Didn't have so much to ask, but when you were discussing humility.
Yeah.
At one point, you said that there was two things about humility. And one point you said you're making the distinction between the form of humility. We can confuse the form of humility with the consciousness of humility.
Yeah, because you can do things with so much pretense. I know the form of humility is you're submissive, but you can be submissive but it could be self-serving. It could be because you want people to see how humble you are, like Prabhupada said, you know. Someone says, you know, I'm the most humble. Prabhupada said, you're not the most anything. You know, or it can be, you know, you have a desire to be affirmed by someone, but it's an ego desire. You feel that if this person affirms you, then I am great. So you try to surrender that person. It's part of your desire and your self-image. There's so many ways you can have a pretense of something without getting deep into it. So
yeah.
So I'm really trying to, you know, I think all these things, this is just like an experiment because I just couldn't really figure it out, you know, because I have such a desire when I do give a presentation that it, and, you know, you helped me with that because you have a high demand that things have a flow and a logic to it that, you know, I've understood everything clearly. And even when I was writing this down, you know, I was still kind of trying to figure it out, you know, how to present it. I'm glad I gave it first before I gave it to people because I still need a lot more thought about this. And I'm really deeply trying to, you know, I think I just may go to these different ideas and just, I guess that the basic point that I think here is that they're core spiritual concepts. You know, they're core spiritual concepts. And and if you don't understand them deeply,
Can I clarify another thing you said?
Oh, wait one second. Yeah, their core, I think the point is their core spiritual concepts, and if you don't understand them deeply, right, your application of them will be very limited. Your application of them Yeah, okay, what was your question, Gail? What do you want to say?
Yeah, you were saying that you want to be, oh, we want to see, one person wants to see himself as, let's say, inadequate, and the other person, what, sees himself as?
No, one person has I said something like, yeah, I really, that kind of, I think I wrote it down here. It's not how you feel about yourself, I am low, right? But it's how you want to feel about yourself. See, a person is humble, he wants that feeling, right? He doesn't want to feel great. So someone may be feeling very, very low, but that's not what they want. That's not what their self-ideal. So they're feeling low, but they want to feel great about themselves. So that causes a psychological aberration. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The other person, he wants to feel low only because he wants to experience God's mercy. Only for that reason, isn't it?
Because his goal is God, right? And God's so great that he has love. See, he's not into it about himself and his position, his aggrandization, his control, and his enjoyment. He's not about that. He's about serving. So he embraces that feeling of humility. It allows him to feel mercy.
Yeah, right. So when I said that, you know, he wants to feel low because he wants to experience God's mercy, you corrected and say he wants God. But isn't it the same thing as saying he wants?
It's the same thing.
Yeah.
Okay. It's the same thing. Same thing. Anyway, I'm trying to, it's really, I'm trying to figure this all out in presentation, but I'll do a little more thought. Anything else, Gail?
Oh, no, thank you, Maharaj.
Thank you. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna, Guru Maharaj, this is Rajarade.
Jai. Okay, we'll see you on the 7th. Bye.
Yes, thank you, Maharaj.
Okay. Anybody else like to say hello? Okay, we'll end it today. Thank you all for your attention.